right, thank you very much. Actually, my talk is going to focus on communication systems of the common bedbug, Simex lectularius, and in particular, my research results that lend evidence to the existence of contact and airborne aggregation pheromones. Now, we all know the bedbugs, and we've seen here in the first couple presentations that bedbugs commonly are found in aggregations in their natural environment within tight cracks and crevices. And an interesting aspect of this is that when they go out on bouts of host foraging, they will very often return to these same aggregation sites, which are termed harborages. And this sort of hints that there's some sort of communication system between aggregated insects and insects that are out foraging. Now, there has been some work in identifying Simex lectularius pheromones. However, most of this research is quite old, more than 30 years old, in fact. And there have been alarm pheromones identified as E2 hexanal and E2 octanal, the major scent gland components. And there's also evidence for an assembling scent, and that is filter paper discs that were exposed to adult bedbugs tended to induce more aggregations than did unexposed discs. However, from the experiments that were done, the source, the mode of action, or chemicals mediating that aggregation response were not identified. So that led to our hypothesis, which was that Simex lectularius use pheromones in part to mediate their aggregation behavior. And to test this hypothesis, we wanted to meet the following objectives. First, we wanted to determine whether juvenile Simex lectularius are also producing and responding to this assembling scent. It was interesting to note that Levinson and Barillon noticed that fifth instar nymphs showed much less response to, but without providing data, much less response to the adult exposed paper. And so we wanted to see if juveniles were also involved in that signaling. The second objective was to determine whether the assembling scent is perceived by olfaction or contact chemoreception, so whether it's working as a volatile attractant or as an arrestant. Considering the results we got from the first two objectives, we wanted to then further investigate whether Simex lectularius use an airborne pheromone, and then, of course, from there to identify the pheromone components. So we did this by doing behavioral assays, and we used three chambered binary choice still air olfactometers. In either of the lateral chambers, we placed a paper towel disc and randomly assigned treatment and control stimuli to the lateral chambers. A single insect was released from the central chamber 3 hours before the end of scotophase, which corresponds to their period of greatest activity. And their response, if they were found on a paper disc in either lateral chamber, was recorded 16 to 18 hours later during photophase when they'd normally be in a resting state. Now, all bioassays were done in environmental chambers to ensure that the environmental conditions were constant. Alright, so our first objective was to determine whether juveniles also produce and respond to the aggregation pheromone. And we did a full factorial comparison of juveniles, adult males, and adult females. And we tested paper towel discs that were exposed to 10 bedbugs for 6 days, either juveniles, adult males, or adult females, and tested them against paper towel discs that were kept under the same conditions but were not exposed to insects. And so here's the results, slides of those experiments, and I'll just walk you through it here. On the x-axis at the bottom, you can see it indicates the number of responding insects, and at the top, it indicates the type of insects that were responding. On the y-axis here, we've got the type of stimulus they were responding to, either juvenile, adult male, or adult female exposed papers. And the numbers in the bars indicate the numbers that responded to each stimuli. An asterisk indicates statistical significance, and the numbers in the brackets are the number of non-responders. And as you can see from the data here, it was interesting that we saw that, similar to the observations of Levinson and Barillon, were that juveniles didn't respond to adult exposed paper, which slightly differed from what we heard from Stephen Kells. And, but however, the juveniles did show a significant preference for juvenile exposed paper. On the flip side, adults only seem to show a significant preference to adult male exposed paper and not to juvenile or adult female exposed paper. So this indicated to us that there were stage-specific aggregation pheromones in the bedbug. So now for objective two, we wanted to determine whether the aggregation pheromones were perceived by contact, chemoreception, or by olfaction. And the term assembling scent sort of implies that it's an olfactory perception and that they're being attracted. So we tested this by suspending the the stimulus paper towel discs from the lids of the olfactometers, making them inaccessible to physical contact of the responding insects. If the pheromone is a volatile compound that is being perceived by olfaction as attracting the insects, we should still see a preference for the treatment discs. However, when we ran the experiments, juveniles showed no preference to juvenile exposed paper when they couldn't physically contact it, and females showed no preference for male exposed paper when they could not physically contact it. And when you can compare it when they were able to, you can see that there's a loss in bioactivity. This indicated to us that it was perceived by contact chemoreception and is acting as an arrestant rather than an attractant. So we believe that Cymexectularis use these contact stage-specific pheromones to mark their harborages, and there might be differences between juveniles and adults for various reasons. One might be that juveniles might be more interested in harborages that provide a safe refuge in order for growth and development, and also potentially for aggregation to prevent water loss, as we just heard before. For adults, they may be more interested in finding harborages that may contain other adults and potential mates for reproduction. And as I mentioned before, that's about water loss that we just heard before. All right, now that we have that evidence for the assembling scent being a contact pheromone, we wanted to investigate whether Cymexectularis use airborne aggregation pheromones. And as I mentioned, bedbugs will return to their harborages after bouts of host foraging, so this sort of indicates that there's some way that they're relocating these harborages. And harborages contain a whole wide range of potential sources for semiochemicals. They contain live bugs, dead bugs, caskins, feces, and eggs. So there's a large range of potential semiochemical sources. And conveniently enough, the colony jars I kept them in contained all that material. They're essentially artificial bedbug harborages. So we placed the colony jars inside glass aeration chambers and used an aspirator to draw charcoal-filtered air over the colony jars, and the volatile-laden air then passed through pore pack Q. Volatiles were trapped on the pore pack Q, and 72 hours later, the pore pack trap was eluted with pentane, producing a colony jar aeration extract. Aliquots of this extract were then tested against, tested in the three-chambered stellar olfactometers. But because we were dealing with a volatile substance, we wanted to make sure the air currents in the environmental chamber weren't disrupting the odor gradient. So we placed the olfactometers in these plastic bins and covered them for the assays. So to protect them from the air currents, but also it prevented directional lighting from above that could have potentially influenced the insect's response. And when we tested the colony jar aeration extract at 200 bug hour equivalents, one bug hour equivalent being the amount of volatiles released by one insect in 1 hour, we could see a very strong response to the colony jar aeration extract. So we were encouraged by these results, so we wanted to go and find out which were the bioactive components within the aeration extract itself. And because we could not use electrophysiological methods, which are commonly utilized in our lab, we had to settle for separation and bioassay of the original extract. And we did so by placing a concentrated aliquot of the colony jar aeration extract on top of a silica gel column and eluted it with a series of five solvent mixtures, all increasing polarity. This generated five fractions that contained compounds or analytes of increasing polarity. What we wanted to do then is test recombinations of these five fractions while removing one fraction at a time to see when bioactivity was lost. That would indicate where the bioactive components were located in these fractions. So here are the results of that experiment. At the top here, you can see when all five fractions were recombined, we elicited a significant behavioral response. And from the results here, we can see that only when silica gel fractions 2 or silica gel fractions 4 were removed did we see a decrease in the preference for the colony jar aeration or aeration extract blends. This indicated to us that the bioactive components were contained in these two fractions. We analyzed those two fractions using coupled gas chromatography mass spectrometry, and all compounds that were detected above a threshold of about 10 picograms were identified as candidate pheromone components. This here is a representative trace of an entire colony jar aeration extract. And we identified 14 candidate pheromone components from that blend that contained aldehydes, a couple ketones, monoterpenes, an alcohol, and an acetate. So we wanted to test if a synthetic blend of these compounds could elicit a similar behavioral response to the natural extract. So we took the 14 authentic standards of the components and mixed them in proportion that they occurred in the colony jar aeration extract and tested them at the same dose as we had tested the colony jar aeration extract. And as you can see from the results here, adult or juveniles, adult males, and virgin adult females showed a significant behavioral response to the synthetic blend. However, interestingly, mated adult females did not. This is an interesting point that I'll revisit a little bit later. Just keep that in mind. But now that we had a synthetic blend that was eliciting a response from both sexes and juvenile stages as well, we wanted to then determine whether all of those components were necessary to elicit the behavioral response. So we did chemical group deletions, single compound deletions, and combination deletions in order to determine exactly how many of those 14 chemicals we could remove and still elicit a response. All of these were done using juveniles because juveniles showed the most consistent response and because mating status would not be a concern, as we had seen just from the previous slide. So in our chemical group deletions, we compared the full 14-component synthetic blend against blends that had classes of organic compounds removed. And as you can see from the results, if we removed any one of the classes, the preference was lost, indicating to us that at least one compound from each group was necessary to elicit the response. We then did single compound deletions, removing one compound at a time. And here we can see that only when octanol, EZ24-octadienol, benzyl acetate, or geranyl acetone was removed, did we not see a decrease in the preference for the synthetic blend. This indicated that these compounds might be removable from the overall blend. So then we did combination deletions to see if we could remove all four of the compounds at once. And as you can see down here at the bottom, when we removed all four compounds at once, we still could elicit a significant behavioral response. This led to our conclusion that the airborne pheromone consists of 10 essential components, which are benzaldehyde, nonanal, decanal, E2-hexanal, E2-octanal, EE24-octadienal, sulcatone, plus and minus limonene, and benzyl alcohol. Now, in aerations of juveniles, adult males, or adult females, we could find detectable levels of 9 of the 10 of those compounds. We can't make a conclusion on benzyl alcohol yet because it co-elutes with limonene and it does so in very small amounts, so we could not tell for certain in our GCMS analyses if it was in fact present or not. Now, both enantiomers of limonene seem to be necessary in order to elicit a response, so we did, and it was quite troublesome to find out the enantiomeric composition. We had to do many aeration collections, concentrate all that sample down to basically one or two shots, run it on Cyclodex chiral column, and we found that those two enantiomers are present and that they exist in about a 1 to 1.3 plus to minus ratio. Well, now that we whittled down the blend, we wanted to see, can the synthetic blend work in a more open environment resembling their natural setting rather than in small enclosed olfactometers? So we did these cage experiments where we randomly assigned treatment and control paper towel discs to opposing corners of a cage. In the center, we released 10 juvenile insects 3 hours before the end of scotophase and scored 16 hours later during photophase. In this case, the synthetic blend was the treatment and pentane solvent was control. However, we added juvenile contact pheromone to both treatment and control discs to arrest the insects on the site of their first response. And we found when we tested that we caught a significantly greater proportion of responding insects on the synthetic blend treatment than we did on the control. That was interesting because it tested an interaction between the contact and airborne aggregation pheromone, but we wanted to see if harborage structure in lieu of the contact pheromone in order to arrest responding insects would be enough and that synthetic blend could then in a sense work on its own to catch a significant number of bedbugs. So we randomly assign treatment and control synthetic blend or pentane solvent to either of the two paper towels underlying a cardboard square, corrugated cardboard square, and we release 10 juveniles from the front of the aquarium, and again at 3 hours before the end of scotophase, and gave them 16 hours to respond, and they were recorded in photophase. And once again, we found that the cardboard squares that were treated with the synthetic blend caught a significantly greater proportion of the responding insects than did the solvent control. So our conclusions then were that Simex lectularius behaviorally respond to the scent of conspecifics, and that they behaviorally respond to a synthetic pheromone blend consisting of 10 essential components. Now, this is a quite complex blend, but that might serve to give the signal specificity, especially in terms of areas where you have tropical bedbugs and common bedbugs cohabitating. It's it can be harmful to common bedbugs to mate with tropical bedbugs, so specificity might be important. Alternatively, it might allow for orientation within the tight cracks and crevices in which in the enclosed microhabitats in which bedbugs often are found in aggregation. It likely acts as an attractant, but we haven't demonstrated directed amenotaxis yet. It's difficult to do because bedbugs really don't like moving air, so we believe it likely acts as an attractant, but we haven't shown it positively yet. E2-hexanal and E2-octanal are multifunctional pheromones that are attractive at lower doses and repellent at higher doses. It was interesting to note in the work by Levinson et al. In 1974, they did notice that E2-hexanal and E2-octanal had a relatively high threshold for eliciting alarm behavior. So that seems to fit in well with the results that we got here, because these two compounds were essential to eliciting the attractive response. As I mentioned before, it was interesting that mated adult females did not respond to the synthetic aggregation pheromone. And this might be for a couple reasons. One, that it has been shown that females that are remated through traumatic insemination at a high rate have reduced longevity and can pay some fitness costs associated with that. So it might be that mated females do not want to return to a harborage where they may be subjected to repeated traumatic inseminations. Also, it might facilitate passive dispersal by allowing mated females to seek out new refugia as opposed to returning to established harborages. In this sense, they can then find refuge on human articles or other materials such as that that could facilitate their passive dispersal to new areas. So some implications for pest management with the results of the work is that synthetic blend could be placed within a retaining device as a lure to provide sensitive detection of bedbug populations in human dwellings. Of course, this needs to be field tested, and we're currently undertaking that. In addition, host-associated cues could also be utilized to improve sensitivity of bedbug detection, and we're currently working on some of those cues in the lab, but they're still at the stages too early to talk about today, and as you can tell, I don't have time to talk about them today. But I just want to acknowledge all these people were very important to my research, funding, of course, necessary, and all these results have been filed as a patent with SC Johnson as the project sponsor and would be the license holder. So those are the references, and thank you very much. I can take questions now. Yes. All right, the question was, are the results influenced by the physiological state of the insects? No, they're not. I always kept them at the same physiological state. I would use them or approximately the same. I used insects that were 2 to 4 weeks post-molting when they were juveniles. So they had fed to repletion, molted, and then 2 to 4 weeks after that I used them. And then for adults, when I use them again 2 to 4 weeks after their last feeding. So I didn't really test a wide range of physiological states. I kept it constant so I could actually get a consistent response when I was trying to detect differences in response to different blends. Yes?
Was that the aquarium that you used when you were testing the
All right, that's a good question. What was the size of the aquarium experiment that I looked at? And the answer to that, I can't remember the exact measurements, but it was 2.5 feet. And so the distance would be approximately half of that, and that's the maximum distance that I have tested.
Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Thank you.